Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending some time with me today. As their name suggests, the Motown Trio, the Supremes, were superlative at everything they did, their singing, choreography, and of course, their fashion. The style of the Supremes takes center stage in the new book by one of the group's founding members, Ms. Mary Wilson. Titled Supreme Glamour, the book is full of beautiful photos of Mary Wilson, Diana Ross, and Florence Ballard rocking some of the group's most iconic looks. From sequin sheath dresses to feather boas and glittery capes galore, the Supremes were the definition of fashion icons as they rocketed to fame under the direction of Motown and Berry Gordy. But the book is more than just fashion. It's about the glitz and the glam and the grace of the Supremes, how it marked a turning point in how Americans thought about Black women and how Black women saw themselves. Supreme Glamour is available to purchase now. And Mary Wilson is my guest. I am so happy to meet you, Ms. Wilson.
Hi, Allison.
And you look fabulous today.
Oh,
I just want to tell everybody.
You. Well, you know, I don't normally walk around with all this makeup on, but I did a TV show this morning. So, you know, it was kind of... Put the makeup on for TV.
I think you probably look this fabulous all the time, quite frankly.
No, I don't wake up like this, trust me. At 75 and a half years old, I don't wear a lot of makeup because I don't really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But for TV, you do have to put it on. So this is not my normal way I run around. I'll take off the jewelry for you, Allison. So it's just me and you.
All right. Why did you want to put this book together?
Well, this is my third book, actually. Dream Girl, My Life is a Supreme, mm-hmm. is the first book. My second book was Supreme Faith, Someday We'll Be Together. Then they combined the two. I did new chapters, new pictures, and that became the third one. So this officially is the fourth book, but really it's the third. Is that confusing? It's confusing to me, too, but it's true.
But not at all. But this mm-hmm. is not only just a book about your life. It's also just a very beautiful coffee table book, kind of book that you put on a coffee table and you pick up and you just want to leaf page through page through page.
It is a coffee table book, basically. And there are loads of pictures in it. So you can either look at the pictures. That's what I do whenever I get anything. I look at the pictures first. And then you can go back and read the text. It has a lot of information. It's really informative.
It is.
And what's great about it, I think, is that because I've written the other two books about the Supremes, I didn't want to go back and write the same thing. So this is more of an overview of everything. So I think that even the fans who've been fans of ours for years and years and years, you know, they won't feel that, oh, I know that, because I put in a lot of things that maybe they don't know. So
yeah,
to keep it interesting, you know.
One of the little nuggets that is in the intro is you talk about you thought you had most of the Supremes costumes and the gowns and boxes in storage,
mm-hmm.
and then you went and opened some boxes, and there were some mm-hmm. that were missing.
Well, yeah, and let me explain that, how that happened. When each girl would leave the group or was put out or whatever it was, mm-hmm. they had to leave the gowns because, the group was continuing, and we had these beautiful gowns, so we couldn't just... let them take it away. Plus, we had paid for everything, you know, the Supremes. And so I ended up with all these gowns in my garage. And the other thing is that some of them were like old, and so we couldn't wear them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we just, you know, retire them, let's put it that way. And then what happens after everyone was gone, I ended up with all of these gowns. But I hadn't opened the boxes, so I didn't know what was there and what wasn't there. And that's when I found that, whoa, they're not all here. And how that happened was, you know, we would retire them, and our road managers would store them, and they were stored. Some were stored at Motown. Some were stored at other international costumes in L.A. They were stored all over the place. So then I had to go around and try to get them all together, and that's when I realized they just weren't all there. I did, however, last month when I was in London, I got one gown back. A girl found it in some parts of France.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
She said she was driving in there and someone was having, they call it over there a boot sale, which we call a garage sale.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she saw this sparkly dress up there and she went over and she said, oh, I want that, how much? And they told her and she bought it. Then she looked inside and she saw a tag. It said, you know, Supremes Mary Wilson.
Wow. That was meant to come back to
you.
Isn't
that amazing? In France? How did they get over there?
And how did she just decide at that in that moment? She could have kept driving.
She could have kept driving. And she said, the lady said it had been in her barn for like 30 years.
I want to hear that dress's story.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Amazing. And my gowns were, most of the gowns have been at different exhibits. It opened up at the, it was curated by, when we opened the boxes, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum in Cleveland came out and they curated all of the gowns for me. And it was in their museum for a while. Then it went on to England and it opened up at the Victoria and Albert's Museum there, and then it toured Great Britain for about 3 years. So it's been on tour. In fact, I think it's going on tour now in New Jersey somewhere. I say New Jersey. That's what I was told to say that. Anyway, it's I think it opens in the next couple of weeks.
All right.
In New Jersey. Yes.
Well, keep our eyes open mm-hmm. for that. In the foreword for the book, Whoopi Goldberg wrote the foreword, and she writes about remembering seeing the Supremes on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time.
Could you read that?
Yes.
It's so beautiful what she said.
She writes, seeing your group on stage made her realize, quote, I too could be well-spoken, tall, majestic, an emissary of black folks.
Oh.
At the time, did you realize how important you were on that level, aside from just being a musical group?
No, because I don't know if people realize back then in the 60s, black people were not really considered citizens here in America. A lot of literature refers to black people as glistening black bodies, you know, and that's pretty demeaning. When you go back and mm-hmm. read some of that stuff, it's pretty demeaning. So that's how we grew up in that environment, being three little black girls in the Brewster Projects in Detroit, Michigan. And people were viewing black and white TVs, right? You didn't see many black faces on television. We had great black artists that we of course stood on the shoulders of them, like Lena Horne, mm-hmm. Dorothy Dandridge, Ethel Waters, you know, all these Ella Fitzgerald, all these great people, but they didn't have television as much. And when we came around, television was really becoming to be the thing. Ed Sullivan showed up, and you know, then all of a sudden you see these black faces. This is kind of what Whoopi was referring to. Now you can see beautiful black people on TV, and we were one of the first sort of groups to have that happen. We weren't the only girl group. Mm-hmm. There were lots of girl groups. My favorite was the Shirelles, the Chantels. I mean, all these, they were great. Mm-hmm. But television wasn't as popular then, so they weren't seen as much as we were. So that's why I think the Supremes became the main, you know, they say the greatest girl group, only because television really helped.
It was at this right time, and you were the right people right
there
for it, too.
Being at the right place at the right time. So that's kind of how we got that title. And I want all my friends who are in those girl groups who inspired us to know that, you know, I don't think that we're the greatest girl group out there. I mean, I love me some Shirelles and Chantels, you know what I mean? So that was really great.
My guest is Mary Wilson. We're talking about her book, Supreme Glamour. So it's interesting also in the book, another tidbit is that there's a misconception that Motown and Barry Gordy gave you all a makeover. You arrived with your own sense of style.
Yeah, and I say that, and not to take anything away from Motown, because I want to clarify this. I loved being at Motown. Mm-hmm. I was so happy when Mr. Gordy said he really wanted us to be there. But however, he did turn us down the first time. And, you know, he really did. He says, when we auditioned, there were four of us as a primus. And he said, you know, come back and see me after you graduate from high school. Well, we weren't about to quit high school anyway, because our parents would have killed us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? My mom couldn't read nor write. And the one thing she says, I want my children to go to college, get some education. So we weren't about to do that. However, we went to another record company and started singing. And then we said, you know what? Motown is where we want to be. And so we went back, and eventually they signed us. But yeah, we came there still dressed as young teenage girls, but we always had our little cheap pearls on from Woolworths, you know, and you know, we had little gloves and all this stuff. We were always well dressed because our parents, Diane's mom, my mom, Florence's mom, they were all elegant women,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we had good, we were brought up very well. And so when the Motown people saw us, they recognized that we were, you know, oh, these girls they're kind of different.
They have home training.
Yeah, home training. And then we look at Mrs. Powell, our finishing school teacher at Motown, said, you girls are just diamonds in the rough. and we are here to polish you. That was a wonderful thing for young teenage girls to hear. You know, such it gave us such self-esteem, mm-hmm. and it stays with me right now. She also says, one day you're going to be singing before kings and queens. Well, we're only 16 years old. We had never even seen any queens, you know, except, well, they weren't out of the closet yet, my best friends. They weren't out of the closet yet. But, you know, we didn't know what she was talking about, but eventually we did. We started singing before kings and queens.
How much input and what input did you give into what your costumes would look like, mm-hmm. what you wanted them to represent, color, anything? Yes. What was your input?
Well, first of all, as I said, we always liked to dress, you know, well. That was something mm-hmm. that we were just brought up doing. I remember as about 8 years old, my cousin said, we had on these dresses, and when she went out and we played in the, and she played in the dirt, and she says, Mary didn't even touch the dirt because she didn't want to get her, you know, her dress all dirty. And so I think that we all loved fashion. We just loved dressing up. Mm-hmm. So no one had to tell us, you know, to dress up.
You had a very well-known dress designer.
We had quite a few.
Quite a few. I'm thinking mm-hmm. of the gentleman who was Liberace's.
Yes. Well, let me start.
Michael Travis.
Let me start from the beginning. So we were buying gowns. No, we were making gowns. Diane went to finishing in her school, Cass Tech in Detroit, where they had, she was in the fashion department. Mm-hmm. So she was the one who had the ability to really sew well. And so she and I made a couple of our earlier dresses. And then after that, we started shopping, buying things from Saks Fifth Avenue when we started making some money. Then doing TV shows like the Ed Sullivan, Flip Wilson, Sonny Cher, all those shows, designers would come.
Interesting.
And so that's how we started getting couture gowns from these designers. The very first one, however, was a female, and that was Levita out of San Francisco. She made a dresses for us, so that was our first couture. Then after that, of course, we started buying from Michael Travis, with whom you were referring to. Michael Travis designed for Carol Burnett and Liberace and Nancy Wilson, people like that. And after Michael Travis came Bob Mackie. Then after Bob Mackie, you know, we had Pat Campano. So each time, every year, you know, someone would leave, as people do, mm-hmm. and you'd have to get someone else. So we were very privileged to start having these wonderful designers design for us.
Do you remember what it felt like the first time you put on a couture gown?
Well, when Levita gave us the gown, mm-hmm. well, first of all, let me tell you, the first time we put on a gown and from Saks Fifth Avenue. Now, everyone knows Saks, right? Because we used to try to go to some of these stores and they would follow us around because we're black. And mm-hmm. see, it was still not, they didn't know, you know, they follow black folks around. And so now when we started, got money, and we started buying our things from Saks, then they would leave the store open for us, right? So that changed. But when Levita gave us the couture, that really was that was really for us very elevating, I mm-hmm. think. And we felt really that we had made it, because we not only could afford the gowns, but now we wore exquisite things. And this was no longer pretending to be adults. We were young adults. I think that's what you asked me, right?
Yeah, no. It's like that first time you ever put on anything that's just sort of extraordinarily made or designed. I've had the good fortune a couple of times to wear couture, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. It's a whole different feeling.
Isn't it a feel?
The bodice work, mm-hmm. the design, the way that the designers know how to use the fabric so
yes.
it flows a certain way.
Yes,
it's a whole thing.
You feel elegant, and that was really the way we felt as well. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there are many, many people who not only designed the gowns, mm-hmm. but they're also the people who actually executed them and made them. They sewed each individual bead, some seed beads. There were pearls, there were rhinestones, there were all kinds of things on our gowns. The Queen Mother gowns, people always say, well, which one is your favorite? This is not necessarily my favorite, the Queen Mother gowns, but it's what it is that they were. We wore them at our first command performance in England in 1968. Ooh. And that was a feeling of just so, we were singing to the Queen Mother, Prince Charles, you know, Princess Margaret. Princess Margaret said to me in a receiving line, she says, Mary, is that a wig you're wearing? I could have slapped her. You know, we're just out of the projects, okay?
Do I know you?
Yeah, right. We're just out of the projects, right? I'm like, here I am, the biggest moment in my life with the royal family of England. And this woman is saying out loud so everybody can hear it. You know, I think Diane Carroll was there, Engelbert Humperdinck, Petula Clark, and she's come, stopped in front of me and said, ooh, is it a wig you're wearing? So, but she and I became friends. But anyway, to say that we wore those exquisite gowns that day was one of the best feelings that one could ever get, that we three little black girls had dared to dream and we had made our dreams come true. Look where we were.
My guest is Mary Wilson. Her new book is called Supreme Glamour. I'm interested because you were artists, you were singers, you had to move. When was a time that, you know, the dress may have been beautiful, but it was not working for you on stage? Did that happen ever?
The dress wasn't? You mean something happened?
Yeah, you were on stage and you thought, like, this is a really great dress, but I can't do what I need to do.
I don't think we ever had anything like that. The only time, perhaps later, now, because we did have, after Flo and Diane were no longer in the group, we had the 70s Supreme. So Jean Terrell joined us, Cindy Birdsong, and there were times when the designers would make these gowns that had strings in them, like and so we would turn and get tangled in them. So those type of things happen. But, you know, it was just because of just the tangles. You know? Yes. They were all over the place. So that was it. I do want to mention, too, we mentioned Motown, but I want to mention that we have a new 60th anniversary album out by Universal Motown.
Oh, exciting.
Yes. So, and Motown has a documentary out. I'm in that, guys. I don't like the way I looked that day. But anyway, had I known it was going to be a feature film, you know, I would have put on more makeup or whatever. But anyway, but these are some exciting times for me. So much is happening. And as I said earlier, I'm 75 and a half years old. And it's amazing to still be doing the things I'm doing. So I want to say to the women out there, you got to believe in yourself. Forget, you know, people say, oh, I can't tell you how old I am. You're still here. You're breathing. Mm-hmm. Tell them. Be proud of it.
Talk about second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh acts. You are currently on Dancing with the Stars. Mm-hmm.
Where's my partner? Bring my partner in here.
This is a special guest star. Yes. Is your partner.
Tell him to come, honey. This is my new toy boy. I'm only joking, okay? Because my son is older than he is.
Oh, what's the experience been like?
Oh, you kid. Here he comes. You tell me. Look at him. Check him out. What do you think is like, girlfriend? Can he come on this microphone?
Have a seat. Then
come on. Brandon is, first of all, he's my coach, and he tells me now I'm in control now. But when he's rehearsing with me, he's in control. You can talk to him.
Oh, I can talk to him. How are you?
I'm well,
how
thank you.
It's good to see you.
Tell me what is Mary Wilson's superpower?
I think Mary Wilson's superpower is her performance ability, like her characteristics of just being a naturally born performer. And experience, right?
Yes, I think so.
That's accurate.
Yeah, I think it's very accurate, yes. And what's really great is that by him being such a young man and being such a professional, I mean, he really is, you would think he was much more mature than he is. I feel so comfortable learning from him. I don't often feel comfortable when I'm with younger people now because it seems like they know so much and they say, they call me Mary, which I don't like. The respect is not there, but this young man is so, not only is he respectful, you know that he was brought up well. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so now I can relax as an old woman. This first time I'm saying it on your program.
Hold
on. I never say that.
I'm going with experience.
Experience. Yeah, that's what I say.
Experience.
I'm saying it because on some of the tweets that people are saying is that, well, Mary, you know, she is 75 years old and, you know, she was a little stiff. You know, that's the comment. You know how people say their own thing, but I'm 75 and a half, okay? And if you can get up there and do that at 75 and a half,
amen to that.
Bless you, right?
Amen that.
But I just say all that to say that he's a wonderful teacher, and this is what, your third year on dancing?
Yeah, third year on dancing.
And he's going to go far because he's a wonderful choreographer and dancer himself.
So. And you're still open to learning.
Me, I love to learn. Well, you know, I went to school here. Did I tell you I went to NYU and I graduated from NYU and got my associate's degree here? So I'm really, I love to learn. So that's why we intend to win, because honey, I want to learn all these dances, you know, the tango and the waltz.
This year, a little bit of everything.
What are we doing? We're doing
cha-cha.
We're doing the cha-cha.
All right.
Now, that's a little, it's hard. So my mother's got to work hard over here.
Yes, yes, it's quick.
He said, Miss Mira, you got to move your hips. I'm like, okay, right, yeah, okay. I'm going to move my hips.
Mm-hmm. I know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. She's got
so
that
we're
down.
We're going for the win. And you know, if we don't go all the way for the win, it won't be because we're not good. But some of the girls are young. I mean, these people are young, mm-hmm, on there. And they can move and get all the steps. So that's fine. So I'm here to win only because I want to be the best Mary Wilson that I can be. And that's why I want to win. But mm-hmm, I'm not trying to compete with anyone. Just myself.
You don't need to.
No. Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't need
right.
to.
And I'm not, but you know what? I never have. I've never tried to be someone else. I've mm-hmm always been very happy in my own skin. If I die and come back, I want to come back as a Mary Wilson, but I want to marry a rich man.
I'm sitting right here.
Hey. Yeah. Okay, that is where we're ending this conversation. My guest has been Mary Wilson. And Brandon, thank you so much for making our guest appearance.
No,
the name of the book is Supreme Glamour. It was an honor to meet you, Ms. Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC.
I need love, love, to ease my mind. I need to find someone to call mine. When mama said, can't hurry, love, no, you just have to wait. She said, love don't come easy. It's a game of give and take. Can't hurry, love, no, you just have to wait. You gotta trust, give it time. No matter how long it takes, but how many heartaches must I stand before I find the love to let me live again? Right now, the only thing.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.